This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 331.
All of my properties are in Detroit, in the Detroit city limits. And some of mine bad neighborhoods. Well, well, you would think it's bad neighborhoods, but how is it bad when I pay $2,000 for the house and I get $900 in rent?
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
What is up, everybody? This is Brandon Turner, host of the Bigger Pockets Podcast, here with my friend, my co-partner in crime, my conference attendee partner, David Green. What's up, dude?
What is up, Brandon? You and I just got back from the Pacific Northwest Real Estate Expo hosted by Tarl Yarber, a Bigger Pockets fan and contributor. And we had a blast. We were just hanging around 900 or 950 or so dedicated real estate investors wanting to learn as much as they could. And of course, you were the belle of the ball everywhere we went. Can't take five steps without somebody being like, oh my gosh, it's Brandon Turner, laying out a red carpet for you, flashing lights and
massages, you know, get my feet rubbed. It was really great.
Yeah, I was surprised none of that happened. See that side of you. I didn't know you were one of those guys that's like, take all the brown M&Ms out of my bowl in my dressing room. I don't want brown M&Ms around me. Bit of a diva.
That's exactly how it went. They call me Brandon Diva Turner for a reason. All right. No, it was awesome. And here's a quick tip for everybody. It's a quick tip for everybody. I think actually Kevin had a quick tip, but I'm going to throw this one out there instead. You should go to real estate conferences. Like, I'm not talking about like the necessarily like the boot camps or like the paid, like, you know, 3-day rah-rah, let's sell you on $100,000 course kind of thing, or like the free hour-long seminar. I'm talking about like actual legit real estate conferences where real estate investors get together and talk real estate. Like Tarl has one. I know Dave Van Horn has one over on the East Coast. I think it's called Mid-Atlantic. There's one in Chicago. Bree Schmitz hosting. Joe Farrell's has one in Denver every year. Bigger Pockets may end up having one this year or early next. Like, these things are so good for like getting around other people who are actually excited and doing work, getting in the real world. I walk away from those things inspired, motivated. I'm talking to this guy in the gym and like this like totally unassuming, nice guy in the gym. We ran into each other there during the conference and I'm like, so what do you do? He's like, oh, well, you know, I listened to the podcast a couple of years ago. I decided to get into real estate. I've done 75 deals. And I'm just like, what? Like, this is so cool. Like, just hearing people who are like, yeah, I just got started a few years ago and now I'm crushing it. And anyway, your quick tip, not so quick tip today is, man, go find a real estate event to go to in the next few months. Find a real estate conference, book it out, go to the hotel, stay at the hotel, go hang out at the lobby bar. Like, just surround yourself for a couple of days with people. It'll inspire you, educate you, motivate you, and make you a better investor. There's your quick tip.
I did a class on how you can work as an agent to help build your business and your wealth by learning investing, right? But when I said how many people here have done at least one deal, probably 90% of the room raised their hand.
Yep.
And I was like, man, this is where you want to be if you want to be around people that are actually like making progress and doing stuff. Just the guy that you're talking to when you're standing in line to get your coffee has probably done deals and you can learn from that person.
Yep. So, very, very cool experience. But anyway, we got to get on today's show because today's show is a fantastic episode from somebody who is a few steps ahead of where you are, but not like a million steps ahead. And that's why I love these types of shows, right? Today's guest is Ashley Hamilton. And Ashley is awesome because she owns 10 properties and she bought them in an area that many people would be afraid of, including the former host of the Bigger Pockets Podcast. We used to make a lot of jokes about Detroit. She talks about how she was able to use her market knowledge to like figure out a way to make it work there. And in fact, she started while making $20,000 a year as a waitress, two kids, single mother in like Eminem's backyard. I mean, essentially like she has an inspiring, incredible story. And if you've ever said the words, I don't have the money, or you've ever said, I can't find any deals, or I've got no time, you have no excuse after listening to today's show. And she walks through exactly how she was able to do it.
Passive income without the property headache? It's possible. There's a way to invest passively in real estate and get monthly income without any tenants, maintenance, or property management. The Wealthy have been doing this for years, and if you're an accredited or high net worth investor, you too can collect cash flow without the headaches that come from owning rentals. How? By investing in a private real estate fund with PPR Capital Management. PPR's co-founder, Dave Van Horn, wrote the book on real estate note investing for BP. But he's not just investing in notes. Dave and his team also have an extensive background in commercial real estate. And with PPR Capital Management, they're strategically investing in both notes and commercial real estate nationwide. With over $500 million in assets under management, PPR has provided individuals with a steady source of truly passive income since 2007 without ever missing a payment. Check them out at investwithppr.com. Again, if you're looking to get monthly passive income from an experienced team with a strong track record, go to investwithppr.com today. Every lender loves to talk about how easy it is to get a mortgage. Then, when it's time to fund your next deal, they ask for your full financials, your blood type, your mother's famous spaghetti recipe, and a map to the Fountain of Youth. Sound familiar? You got all that handy, right? Why not switch to a lender who actually makes qualifying for a loan easy? A lender like Host Financial. Host Financial takes the tedious tax returns, endless W-2s, and time-consuming financial requests out of the picture. Their light doc and common sense underwriting guidelines mean frictionless transactions every time. You'll even be able to use the actual or projected income of the short-term or long-term rental you're looking to purchase or pull equity out of. That's what lending built for investors looks like. So take the next step and grow your portfolio faster. Visit hostfinancial.com to request a quote in as fast as 60 seconds, which is faster than this ad. If not, it's pretty close. That's host, H-O-S-T, financial.com. Again, that's host, H-O-S-T, financial.com. You might think you want real estate, but that's not true. What you really want is passive income. With new investors struggling to find deals or get enough money to buy them and veteran landlords tired of the constant tenant phone calls, is there a better alternative? Actually, there is. Short notes from ConnectInvest. ConnectInvest is an online investing platform that allows you to easily participate in passive real estate investing, and all you need is $500 to start. Short notes collectively funds a diversified portfolio of commercial and residential real estate projects across acquisition, construction, and development phases. You'll earn a fixed monthly income without the hassle of owning or managing real estate. Head to connectinvest.com/BP to create your account. Fund your digital wallet with at least $500. Select from 6, 12, and 24-month short notes with annualized return rates up to 9%. Then sit back and let your monthly returns roll in. Join today by visiting connectinvest.com/VP. connectinvest.com/VP.
That's pretty much it. So let's get to the interview with Ashley. But last thing I will say is if you enjoy this episode today, if you enjoy the Bigger Pockets podcast, will you do us a favor? I know we ask for this a lot, but it really helps. And I know that most of you haven't done it. Go over to iTunes or Google Play or Stitcher, wherever you listen to this, and leave us a rating and review. Just let people know that you like the show. Again, we've got like 5 or 6 or 10,000 reviews or something like that. But there's like 250,000 people listen to the show every week. So that means you ain't done it yet, right? And if you do, let us know over on Instagram at Bigger Pockets that you left a review, or at David Green 24, at Beardy Brandon, and we'll give you a virtual high five. So thank you so much. And with that, let's get to today's show with Ashley Hamilton. All right, Ashley, welcome to the Bigger Pockets podcast. Good to have you here.
Thank you. It's definitely good to be here. I'm super excited for today.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome. So before we started recording today, Ashley told me a story about how she had this plan to someday come on the Bigger Pockets podcast and to meet David and I. And here you are today on. So dreams come true.
Absolutely.
It's awesome. Very cool. Well, we totally deserve it. I mean, I know a little bit about your story and it's awesome. And so I'm excited to kind of dig in deeper and learn more about what you've done, how you've been able to do it. So Ashley was born a multi-millionaire, actually came out with millions in her hand, just clutching dollars, and was able to build a massive portfolio. Okay, maybe not. So let's hear your story from the beginning. How did you get started with real estate? Like, we'll talk about before real estate and then getting into that very first deal.
Yep. So basically, I got started in real estate when I was younger. I always liked to watch HGTV, the Flip This House things, all of that. So I always had an interest in really early. So I didn't start from much. I grew up kind of in poverty. You know, my mother, she didn't work. She was unemployed. My father was as well. We were on government assistance and we were on Section 8, you know, and we lived in Detroit our whole life. But to me, I had a perfect childhood. I didn't realize that I didn't experience or get the luxuries that most people did. It was normal to me. But growing up, I realized now that we were living in poverty. Nobody was in business. Nobody even owned a home. My mother, she didn't own a home or anybody. So I just kind of grew up that way. So I knew that early on that I wanted to be independent. and that I wanted to be an entrepreneur, but I kind of did not have anybody to look up to or anybody to ask for help.
I have a question for you. So I'm wondering about like growing up in that mentality, that poverty mentality. I'm curious, and I'm sure you'll get to it, like how you started thinking otherwise, but like, I'm wondering if you can, I guess, talk to people for a minute, if you could, just, I mean, any advice, somebody comes up to you and they're in that same spot, you know, they were raised in poverty, they were raised not knowing people who are out there, you know, hustling and entrepreneuring and real estate investing and all. Is entrepreneuring a word? I just invented that. I'm wondering, like, I mean, do you have any advice for those people who are in that spot before we get into your story, just like how to break out of that mentality, that mindset?
Absolutely. So basically I'm just optimistic about everything. So the biggest thing that I've learned, or I feel like I took on early on, is being a problem solver. So, or never crying over spilled milk. If ever I had a problem, if we didn't have, we had cereal, but we didn't have any milk at home, you know, instead of crying and going about it, I'll just make a different meal, maybe peanut butter and jelly. So, you know, it's like knowing that you have a problem, addressing it head on, and then being a problem solver, you know, being optimistic. So I would say, don't be afraid of things if you think they're unattainable. You know, just stay focused on your goals and they can happen. Just work hard on them. You know, you may have to do some sacrificing, but it definitely will work out for you.
You know, I often say David Green here is the king of analogies, but I'm going to say that was one of the best analogies I've heard about, like, about, you know, you don't have milk for the cereal. Okay. You know, we'll make something else, yeah, right? Like, that's exactly what a perfect definition of what an entrepreneur is. Like, because throughout your entire entrepreneurial career, whether you're doing real estate investing, it's like, oh, I don't have the money for this deal. Well, better sit on the couch and watch TV instead, right? Like that's what most people do. So, okay. I love that mindset, that difference. So, all right. So walk us through, how did you get your very first deal? Where'd that come from?
Well, early on, I knew that what my goal was to retire at 30, to buy 10 properties and sell them all for $100,000 at 30, and then I'll be a millionaire. And then life, you know, life is going to be great. I'll have $1 million. I'll never have to work again. Well, yep. That definitely was not the case. But that was the plan at 22 years old. So how was I going to do that? Well, I had to eliminate my biggest expense, which was my rent. I was paying $700 a month in rent. At 22, I had two kids, single parent. I was making $20,000 a year as a waitress.
Wow.
Yeah. So, so I wanted to eliminate that expense. Well, a lot of people say that I can't get started because I don't have money, right? That's everybody's biggest thing. Well, I didn't have a mother who I can borrow $10,000 from. I didn't have a 401k. I didn't have a line of credit I can get, you know, so I had to find some way. Well, the good thing about it is not having money kind of worked in my benefit because I got a tax return at the end of the year. And by me only making $20,000 and I had two kids, I was able to get a $5,000 to $6,000 tax return. So I went to a rich dad, poor dad seminar and I got the book, you know, I was super excited. So when I got my tax return that year, called a local real estate agent and our properties in Detroit, this was in 2009, were selling for $5,000, $4,000, $3,000, $6,000. So I found the perfect house. It was $6,300. Three bedroom brick with a basement ranch. Okay, great. So how am I going to get that, right? Well, I got my tax return. So when I got the tax return for $6,000, I was able to slowly save up the rest of the money for the clothes. And I didn't need much, but probably like another $1,000 to add with it. So I went ahead and bought the property. It was $6,300. The clothes and made it an extra $1,000. Once I got the property, it needed about $3,000 to $4,000 worth of work. So I saved up for that. And it took me about 5 months to get that to do the work. But basically, I just wanted the house to be livable. You know, it was for me and my kids, but I didn't have to have granite countertops or anything like that. So basically, I went on Craigslist, hired a contractor to paint the house. Of course, he ripped me off and only painted it halfway, painted over wallpaper, whatever. We didn't have any plumbing, so I hired a local plumber to do the plumbing repairs. And that was it. Actually, I moved in a house that didn't even have a furnace in it. It was August in Detroit, so it wasn't necessarily, but I just didn't have the money. Yep. I got into the property off of pure savings in my tax return, honestly. And once I got in, it saw my number one problem was my biggest expense was my rent. So I didn't have to pay rent. So the biggest takeaway I can tell people in this situation is like what I learned from that, even though I didn't have to make that $700 rent payment every month, I still made that rent payment into a savings account. So instead of paying the rent for $700, I would take $600 and put it in a savings account. because I was living fine. I wasn't, you know, balling out of control, but I was living fine paying the $700 in rent. So I just continued to live the same way I did, frugally, and just save that $600 because I knew once I got one house, I wanted to keep doing it. I had a goal of getting 10 properties. So that's the biggest takeaway. So once you eliminate a debt, or if you pay off student loan debt, for example, if you're paying $400 a month in student loan debt and you pay it off, well, that $400 is going to magically disappear if you just don't budget for it or don't park it anywhere. Yes. And you were living fine. You weren't, you know, you were maybe living below your means, but you were living fine paying it. So continue to make it. Maybe just put $350 in a savings account and you'll be surprised how far, you know, that money grows within a year.
That is such a good point. I mean, that actually works two different ways, I guess. I mean, I call it often the income creep. And it says like, hey, when you get a raise at work, you get a raise of $500 a month. You automatically, like naturally without trying, everybody does it. They start spending that extra $500 and your life doesn't really improve any differently, right? It's just like subtle little things. When I was in college, you know, I would sleep in my car instead of getting a hotel. And then I started getting hotels, and then I started getting nicer hotels. And then I started, you know, like if I was like traveling, you know, on a road trip. So like, we all kind of do this income creep, but you're saying it works the other way as well. And I love that. I haven't really thought about it, but it's totally true. When you start paying off things, when you start saving money on different things, that money will also disappear. So make sure that doesn't happen. I think that's a fantastic tip. I think everyone should like think about in their life, like when have they done that? And what's going to be paid off next? What can they reduce the rent? It's not so we can just sit on the couch and do nothing. Hey, I'm making now, you know, I'm living on $5,000 a year total because I don't have any expenses. Like, keep making that money, put it somewhere because we're naturally going to. Okay. So, So you bought that first house. Super cool. I'm wondering about neighborhood stuff, right? When I think, you know, back in the day with Josh Dorkin, when he was on the show here, that was like the running joke, right? Was I'm going to go buy a house for $6,300 in Detroit. How did you feel about that? How did you overcome the difficulties of that? What was the neighborhood like? Was Josh right in assuming that there was all war zones, or was this just misunderstood?
Absolutely not. So my thing was I always wanted to be closer to 8 Mile because 8 Mile is the bridge point between Detroit and the suburbs. You know, okay. The police respond quicker on 8 Mile. So I bought the property. It was about 10 houses off 8 Mile. There wasn't a vacant property in sight. I had great neighbors, great schools. It was actually a park 3 doors down from my house with a basketball court, and life was good. You know, I grew up in Detroit, and honestly, I grew up in a really bad neighborhood, but in Detroit, and I'm sure in any neighborhood is more so, if you're not hanging out with the wrong people and you're not doing the wrong things, you know, things typically don't happen to you. You know, I was a single mother with 2 small kids. I was a target. I would come in from work sometimes at 11, 12 o'clock at night. And I've never, to this day, no one's ever broken into my house. I've never been robbed. You know, I go to the gas station. I do things sometimes that I think that I shouldn't do, like go to the ATM late at night, but I just never experienced these things. And all of my properties are in Detroit, in the Detroit city limits. And some of them are in bad neighborhoods. Well, where you would think it's bad neighborhoods, but how is it bad when I pay $2,000 for the house and I get $900 in rent? You know, in order to pay $900 in rent, you're going to have to make at least 3 times the rent. So you have an individual making $3,000 to $4,000 a month, and they want to stay in these neighborhoods. So what I think the stigma of Detroit is they're bad neighborhoods because the properties are valued so low. And that's definitely not the case. And just really quick, not to get off track, but I was thinking about moving to California a couple of years ago. So we were going to Disney World, me and the kids. And I said, oh, I'll arrange some places to see in Anaheim. So I was going to rent a place. It was $3,600 a month for a 3-bedroom apartment. Oh, great. That's fine. You know, I'll make it. I'll be an agent. I'll go work with David Green or whatever. So we went. And when I went to see the apartment, there was gang signs on the front gate. And I was like, I don't want to pay 3 times the rent to live in California just to say I'm doing it, but I have to worry about my kids. I don't want them exposed to gang. I've never seen a gang graffiti gate in front of an apartment building, you know, seemed like they would just paint it off. So, I mean, that's the stigma about Detroit, but it's really everywhere. I just guess Detroit gets the biggest spotlight because the properties are so cheap.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think, you know, to Josh's credit, I always think he was making fun of the people who are like, where's the cheapest place to buy real estate in the country? Oh, it's Detroit. I've never been there. I don't know anything about it. Let's go buy the cheapest properties there. And I think what you had this competitive advantage is that you understood the market, right? You understood what, like why, you know, you chose a neighborhood that didn't have a ton of vacant houses. You weren't buying like the one occupied house on the entire street of like a bunch of rundown things. So, you know, there's nothing wrong. I don't think there's anything wrong with buying in a rougher necessarily area. I mean, my best performing property out of my entire portfolio, my best performing property is in the worst neighborhood. But I understood it. And I knew that that one block was different than all the other blocks around it. And I understood why that was different. I understood the house that I bought. I understood what I was doing. So because I had that insider knowledge, I was able to make that investment work and work really, really well. And it sounds like you were doing the same thing. You had that insider knowledge.
Yeah. So my biggest thing is that low income people, poor people, people that live in poverty, they need places too. You know, there's not a shortage of places of tenants. There's a shortage of good landlords because when people find a property so cheap, they're like, oh, it's just a rental. Oh, I'm not going to replace this. I'll just throw this together because it's just a rental. Well, I definitely don't do that. Any one of my properties, I will live in them myself, you know, because I'm able to remove myself from the situation. I never want to be bigger than I am. Like even now, out of all the success I feel like I've accomplished, I feel like I'm nowhere near, you know, where I need to be or in a place where I can look above people. That's where I'm at with it. Like if you're not, you don't discriminate against people, you know, just be open-minded and don't feel like just because it's a low income area or a lower property purchase, don't treat it any differently. You know, don't try to cut corners, I would say.
Yeah, such good advice.
Actually, I think Brandon made a really good point that Josh was getting at. Don't go there just because it's cheap, right? Absolutely. Oh, the houses are $1,000. I should go buy some, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because there was a time where you could buy a house. They were giving them away for free in Detroit. Like you could have it if you'll just pay the property taxes. Then you would have still lost money because there was no way to rent it out, right?
Absolutely.
So that was something you had to understand is, well, what neighborhoods are the few tenants that are here actually willing to live in? And you did what very few people have done. In fact, I don't know if I've really talked to any other investors from Detroit. You made it work because you had local market knowledge.
Absolutely.
You were that boots on the ground person that I look for with my long distance strategy. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, I can invest in Detroit if I have an Ashley, because Ashley knows what that block is that Brandon was talking about. And Ashley knows the area that has gang graffiti on the gate of the apartment complex versus the area that is an apartment complex full of gang members that's completely different, where there's going to be like, you know, fires from meth labs and stuff like that. So I believe you're a property manager and agent now as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I just wanted to point out that like you're the person that I'm looking for when I'm saying, well, David, I want to get started buying in this neighborhood. What should I do? Well, you got to find an Ashley. Right. You find the person who's doing it there, who's successful themselves, who has a strategy, and then you pay that person in some way, whether it's through the commission or a bonus as a property manager, whatever, to help you find deals. And I just want to kind of commend you for not letting that stop you from doing it. But instead you said, well, I may be in an area where it's tough to make money. I'm only making $22,000 as a waitress, but I can buy houses here where no one else can because I know what no one else does.
Right. Absolutely. And then honestly, that was the case. I probably didn't see that early on. Because even now I'm interested in investing, you know, out of state or in other areas, other markets. So my biggest thing in Detroit, there's not one zip code that I would not invest in. Now, basically how I determine that, I'll do a drive pass, but if you can't drive past it, you can do a Google Maps. So basically what I'm looking for is maybe the closest three to six houses and make sure they're not vacant or completely burned down. So you can do that with Google Maps. You can hire local people and, or you can look like Rentometer, I believe it's called, and just see, or call a local property manager for a vacant property just to see how long are these properties staying on the market. Detroit is bringing in so many good programs now. So even like I bought a multifamily by accident, which is helping out, trying to help somebody to, it was an older lady that was getting screwed around on the tenants. So I offered to come in for free, give her some advice on how to fix it up. And she just really wanted to get rid of it. She didn't want to put any more money in it. And I ended up purchasing it from her for $14,000. And it was next door to a vacant two-family flat. So everybody said, well, why would you buy that? Well, actually the city of Detroit contacted me by me being the owner next door. And they offered me to buy the two-family flat for $500.
Really?
Yeah. You can buy in Detroit. They have opportunities where you can buy the property next door or the vacant lot next door to you if it is for $500. And you just go into an agreement to fix it up and things like that.
What's that saying people say? Luck is when opportunity meets Preparation. Is that what it is? Yeah. So that's exactly like what happened with Ashley. You were out there in the game making things happen and something came your way. And everyone say, well, that must be nice. The city just happened to call you and say, here's a great deal. They're not calling me, right? But that's because you were out there making it happen. And this, I know this is true because it works this way in other things in life. Like when you're playing basketball, if you're an aggressive player, you get more loose balls, rebounds come to you because you're out there making things happen. Like good things come your way when you're making moves and you're aggressive and you're out there in the game. And the same is true for a lot of other jobs. If you're a salesperson and you're really friendly and you talk to everybody in the office and not just your own stuff, well, opportunity will come your way through that job because other people knew you and liked you. And that's what you're doing, Ashley, is you're out there mixing it up, figuring stuff out, running a lot of deals, analyzing a lot of stuff, looking at opportunity. You buy one, you're trying to do your best job that you can making it happen. And people see that and then they're drawn to you, right? They're not, the bank or the city of Detroit is not going to go browsing through the Bigger Pockets forums and try to find somebody asking questions and like, can you buy this house from us, right? They're going to do the easiest thing they can, which is, oh, look, somebody bought that house. Maybe they're likely to buy this one. And that's what they're going to go out and do. So that's another principle that we can pull out of this is like by being aggressive and putting yourself out there, you can make things happen.
Absolutely. Yeah. So early on when I went to that Rich Dad Poor Dad seminar, like at that point, I didn't know anything about real estate or anything like that. But I learned two important quotes. So one quote was from Warren Buffett, be greedy when others are fearful and be fearful when others are greedy. So in that time in Detroit, everybody was fearful. And even though I didn't have the means or the income to be as greedy as I wanted to, I definitely feel like that's what I was doing at that time. In situations where everybody was backing out of and being scared of, I was just buying and offering on everything I possibly could. And then another quote that I typically live my life by, and I could say will be a good example for anybody that doesn't have the money, the knowledge, or the family support, would be willing to live a few years how most people won't, so that you can live the rest of your life how most people can't or don't.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Brandon says it all the time, but it's like a Dave Ramsey quote. What is it, Brandon?
Well, I say it like Dave Ramsey says something like, yeah, live like no one else now so you can live like no one else later. Yeah. I like the way that you put that, Ashley, better, or that person did.
Yeah. So that's where I first heard it at. I probably feel like people probably changed it a little bit and called it their quote or something like that.
That's what Brandon does. He bites quotes. That's exactly right.
I don't ever claim quotes for myself. I just quote other people all the time. I have like 1,000 quotes up here that I just like to throw out there.
He changes one word and then
most
calls
of them
it
are Jim Rohn.
That's
what I was going to say. Maybe I should change one word.
He's like, no. I said live like nobody else later. He said live like no one else later. This is different.
This is my
Brandon's quotes. Yeah. Very
You
gosh,
go
yeah,
look at my Instagram. I don't have quotes of my own on there. All right. Calm down, David. Dave Green.
Email Josh Dorkin and ask him. He'll tell you
guys. It was one time. All right. No, Ashley.
About that.
No, this is awesome. Okay. So I want to know, first of all, let me go to the end of your story real quick. Okay. Like where you're at today. How many properties do you have today?
Okay. Right now I own 10 properties. I'm sorry, 9 properties, but 10 doors because one of them is a multifamily.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. So you started with that very first one. Now you got 10, which is awesome. Can you walk us through we don't have to go through each one individually, but how did you get from that first to the 10th? I mean, what did you do for the first rental then and the second and the third? How did you pull those off?
So my second rental, like I said, I was able to put the money that I was paying in rent into a savings account. And then I waited till I got my tax return the next year. So my second property was I paid $4,000 for, and it needed about $6,000 worth of work. So I had the money because I was saving. I had saved about $5,000 for the year, and I got another tax return for about $5,000. But my mom was 55 years old at the time and had never owned a property. She was getting ready to have to move out of her house. So I decided to do a land contract with my mom. She was only paying $700 a month in rent. And I told her she can move here and pay me $600 in rent. And then in 3 years, she can own it. Well, I wish I could have gave my mom a property or bought my mother a property. But at that time, I was still only making $22,000 a year. And I just wasn't in a situation. So I had to come in as a business decision, but also trying to help my mom out, because if it wasn't for me, she would have still been renting. So yep. that was really smart to me, or a really good situation for me, because it eliminated the rehab costs because she did the work herself, and it eliminated the expenses, the taxes, the property insurance and stuff like that. So that's how I got the second property. I went ahead and land contracted it for my mom with zero down and just $600 a month for 3 years, because I only paid $4,000 for the property.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. And basically after I just kept repeating the process. So all the rent from the property that I was collecting, the rent that I was saving from my own house into my income, just basically saved that and then waited till I got my tax return the following year and then bought another property. So I repeated that step and then eventually I was able to buy two properties or, you know, more in a year. I know I kind of stuttered a little bit on it, but I really just wanted to hone in on that repeat process and how I was just being saving and being frugal, because yeah. I could have said, oh, I own a property or own two properties. I can go have every new iPhone that comes out. And I yeah. didn't. I still had to go. And, you know, it is repeatable, but I did have to live below my means. You know, I had to see all of my friends. I was only 23 at the time. All of my friends were going to concerts, taking trips, buying new clothes. And I couldn't go. I couldn't have those things. But it was more so me living how most people won't, because I knew later on I wanted to be able to be financially free and live how most can't or don't. And that's actually the situation right now.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's such an inspiring story, because I mean, I know people who are making 50, 75, 100, 150,000 a year who are telling me they don't have any money to invest in real estate. And they can't do it. Right. So go, oh, I only make 150,000 a year. I can't, I don't, you know, I'm living on paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah.
And you're like, look, if there's a will, there's a way. Yes. That's a quote I invented. And so there's a will. There's
always let your conscience be your guide. Brandon Turner.
Michael yeah, Scott.
Know, this reminds me of, there was somebody in M1. He might be in GoBundance. I think his name was Austin. And he told us all he wanted to learn wholesaling. And he literally moved to Georgia to work for a big wholesaler out there. And was like, I don't know where I'm going to live. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to learn this business from this guy. And somebody told me the other day, he just grossed like $2.2 million in assignment fees after like 3 years. Right. Wow. So from nothing to that. And I was just thinking as you were talking, actually, like the things that Brandon and I hear all the time is, well, there's no deals out there. And yep. then, well, I don't have any money. How do I do this without any money? Right. And well, there's no one to teach me. I can't find a mentor. And you had none of those things. And yet you made it happen in one of the toughest markets ever. And I was thinking, if someone had done what you did, if they just said, you know what, I'm going to move to Detroit. There's a lot of cheap houses. I'm going to figure out how to make this happen. I'm going to get a job and learn how to give value to employers so I can make money. I'm going to get to know these neighborhoods and know where I can buy and where I can't buy and what I can rent for and how to find deals. Other people could have done the same thing you did, but they're not willing to do what you did. They weren't willing to forego the concerts and the new shoes and the new clothes like your friends were. And so you earn the right to have that. And I just think that like you have this confidence about you in spite of the fact that you're very humble, because you know, like, I put in work other people didn't put in, so I deserve this.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely the case. It really was hard, and and by me being so young, I really felt like I was missing out, but I knew early on I could not depend on anybody. You know, unfortunately, that just wasn't my life. I wish I had a mother or a father that I can ask to borrow money. But if I failed and my car went down and I didn't have $100 to fix it or whatever the price, then my kids were going to be on the bus. And every day I wake up, every day I go to sleep, my biggest thing is to give my kids the life that I didn't have. You know, that's the only yeah. thing that keeps me going. Like, I don't care I'm not doing this so I can have a $50,000 car or Jag in my driveway or a $2 million house. I'm doing it strictly to give my kids a better life and to give them what I didn't have.
Yeah, it's such a powerful why. It just shows the reason of having like a more powerful why than I want to, you know, swim in a gold vault with like Scrooge McDuck, right? Like, it's not about the money. It's not about the number of coins in our bank account that we can swim in. Like, this is about, you know, for every person it's probably a little different, but for most of us it has something to do with our legacy, our children, what we're passing on. You know, like that is what drives you when you're at that hard point in your life where you just don't know what to do and you don't know how you're going to get that next deal done or things are falling apart around you. Mm-hmm. It's when you're in that part of your life, you remember, oh yeah, I'm not doing this for the Scrooge McDuck vault. I'm doing this for my kid, for my kids, for my generation. Yeah. I love that.
So it looks like you made some other moves to help build your wealth. And I'm very interested in that because I made that same move. So you became a real estate agent. Can you tell us a little bit about like why you did that, what your business looks like, and maybe how it helps you with your investing?
Yeah, absolutely. So to be honest, well, when I bought my first property, the real estate agent who sold me the property, she, you know, talked me into doing it. And I was able to become a real estate agent and things were going good. But in Detroit, the commissions aren't much because the properties aren't selling for much. So I would work 30, 45 days on a deal and I would probably make a commission of $1,200 and I'll be splitting that with a broker. So basically I learned early on to find a niche, and then the niche was like rental properties because I would make a 1 month's rent, which is like $700 for a commission if I found a tenant for a property. So I kind of found that rental niche and kind of focused on there. So being a real estate agent, it has definitely helped my business knowing the process and things like that. But honestly, I don't really practice real estate that much in the city. I would help my investors privately, but I really don't. You know, I don't make a ton of money on real estate. I probably do two or three deals a year.
Okay. And you find that that's just because the commissions are so low, you're not going to make a ton of money. So does it help you with your own investing? Or is it just something you kind of do to give back to help other investors get going? Because there's Definitely. So few agents that understand how to work with investors.
Absolutely. So I use it to give back to help my investors that I work for under my property management company. It just helps me by knowing the market, what's out there, and seeing things when it first come on the MLS, but it really doesn't help me in my real estate business because I can't represent myself on a deal. So I haven't really used my real estate license to expand my business that much.
Sure.
Cause like right now I have multiple streams of income. I still work part-time at a major bank here in Detroit. Okay. I work 20 hours a week there. I have my own property management company where I manage 35 properties. And I have my personal rental properties. And I'm also a single mother. I'm very active in my kids' life. I want to be there every morning when they wake up, when they go to sleep. I take them to school and pick them up from school. And every track meet, cheerleading practice, I'm there. So I really can't do too much more. So I would love to be in real estate in Detroit. I know real estate is great everywhere else, but in Detroit, to me, the commissions aren't worth the sacrifice and working 45 days for the commission and the deal doesn't go through. And I miss my daughter's cheerleading competition.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
That's such a good point. I mean, it's why it's so important to never like rely on one piece of advice from anybody that says that you should do this or you should not do this. It's all subjective, right? Like being a real estate agent for Dave here, like David Green is making a lot more commission off of his Bay Area home sales than you're going to be making off of Detroit home sales. Mm-hmm. And so like just knowing that and then looking at your own life, like what do you want to get out? What's the outcome you want? It's not working a whole lot of hours. And so, you know, I totally get that. And then the property management thing, I think that's cool. And I love property management quite a bit. And so you got 35 properties there. Are you looking to grow that thing as well? Is that kind of one of the plans or you're happy where it's at?
Yeah, I'm happy with that. I feel like I can grow it, but I would only do it to help other investors that's knowledgeable what I do now. So I kind of got tricked into it. So I was self-managing all my properties. I didn't know I was going to be a property manager. I had no inspirations or didn't even know what they did, but I was doing it for myself. So a hedge fund out in California, they contacted me and say, hey, Ashley, I seen you list a couple of rentals. Hey, this is what I'm doing. Could you do what you're doing for yourself for me? And I'm like, yeah, I guess I'm doing it for myself. And it turned out really great. And now I'm making money off doing what I would be doing anyway. Yeah, have to cool. have my phone available 24 hours for my tenants in case the toilet break. So now I'm getting paid to do it for 25 other people. Yeah. And another thing is my properties are all inside the property management company. So I manage my properties. Actually, only out of the 10 properties that I own, only two people know that I'm the owner. I kind of tell them that I'm the property manager. So it kind of gets to that Chris Voss. I watched a webinar with him and he was like, seem powerless and kind of so that way you're not cornered into making a decision. Yep. So even if it's my property and someone say, hey, I want a new fence put up, this fence is old. And I'll say, oh, okay, let me talk to the owner about it. But I'm the owner, but they don't know, you know? So that way, if I have to say no, it's not like, oh, she's a bee. I'm not, you know, they don't like me or anything like that. That's,
I did the exact same thing.
It's very simple advice, but it's extremely effective.
Yeah.
Yeah. At first I didn't do that. But once I started doing that about 3 years ago, things were just, it just went so smoothly. Like, I mean, for our interview now, I've been preparing for 2 hours. Our interview, you know, will probably go an hour or so. My phone is probably not going to ring one time because I have my system so good in place. I don't defer first of all, when I first get a property, I try to fix everything. It doesn't matter if I pay $2,000 for it or $20,000. I'm going to do all the work now. I'm not going to say, hey, it's a rental, or hey, this is in Detroit. I'm going to put the same money and time to and make things just as nice as if it was in the suburbs. So that's going to defer a lot of the repairs. But when somebody do call me about something, I'm not going to say, hey, I'm not going to make an instant return off of that, or the tenants are just being petty. I want them to have a good quality of life as well. Just because they're low income or whatever the situation may be doesn't mean they don't deserve a good quality of life. You know, doesn't mean that they're bad people. I was poor my whole life, and I wasn't a bad person. I wasn't a gang member. My mother and father, they weren't robbers, but we were just in a situation where I lived in a really bad neighborhood, but I still wanted nice things, you know, and I still feel like I deserved that because I wasn't, you know, it wasn't my choice to be there. So like I said, there's not a shortage of renters in Detroit. It's a shortage of good landlords in Detroit and good property managers in Detroit. Yeah. And that's what scared a lot of people away.
That's so good. That's so good. That's one of those little clips. We like to take little clips from the show and like put up on Instagram because they're so good. Like that was like one of those things. Like just because they're poor, just because they're in poverty, they're born differently than others, doesn't mean they're bad people. Doesn't mean they don't deserve a great house. You know, one thing, this is actually a quote I created, David Green. Thank you very much. But right, unless somebody else can tell me I stole this, but even those in poverty like Chip and Joanna Gaines, right? Like in other words, If you can provide a good quality product to people, just because it's a low income house doesn't mean, or it's a low income area or a lower income individual, doesn't mean that you don't provide good quality stuff. And good quality stuff doesn't have to be that much more expensive. It's just, just thinking like what, you know, and it just helps us as landlords too. I mean, better quality stuff is going to last longer. People tend to take better care of their properties, less repairs, maintenance, et cetera. All right. So let's go back to your properties here. You got these 10 units now, these 10 doors. Are you still buying them cash, or do you have a bunch of loans on these now? Where are you at?
Not at all. So that's the second phase. Cause I didn't even know, because to be honest with you, the BRRRR strategy, buy, repair, rent, refinance, repeat. Well, I can't buy it because the properties aren't appraising for more than 40 what the banks are lending on. I don't have any credit or equity. I can repair it and rent it out. But how am I going to refinance it? The banks all have minimums. So it's all cash. But I've been able to be creative lately, the last 2 years. And that's how I've been able to grow more. And I've been using credit cards, honestly.
Really?
100% credit cards. But they're 1 year. So they're all paid off. So right now I have no debt on the properties.
Wow.
A couple of them I used credit cards over 1 year, but they paid them off now. So there's no debt on them.
So, okay. So you got 10 doors, 9 properties, 10 doors, all free and clear at this point. I mean, that's amazing. We don't have to go into every bit of how much money they make, but on average, like what are these things renting for? And then what are these properties worth today? Are they still worth $5,000?
Yeah. So being on the Bigger Pockums forums recently, I realized that I can do cash out refinances in Detroit. That was never my plan. Remember, my goal was just to get 10 and wait for them to reach $100,000 and make $1 million, whether that took 10 years, whatever. I never thought about refinancing, pulling cash out. So talking to a couple of lenders on the forums and networking through people, I realized that I got a couple of appraisals on them. And right now the portfolio is worth $469,000.
Wow.
Not including my personal residence, which will boost it up to about $560,000 in equity that I have free and clear. I don't have loan on any of them. So I thought that's nothing, because honestly, I listen to the Bigger podcast and I hear all these people that have 30 doors and, you know, and I'm like, well, what is $500,000 in real estate? You know, how is that going to benefit me? Now I know. Yeah, and the process that I'm in and the lenders that I'm working with now about the refinances and buying bigger properties and multi-units. Now I believe that next year, this time, I'm going to own over $2 million in real estate because I'm planning on do the cash out refis and use those as down payments. So that's good. But on average, just for this one of my most recent properties I paid $2,000 for the property. I know that's weird. I put $17,000 worth of work in the property. So I'm all into it for $19,000. That property rents for $925 a month. And the tenants pay everything. I rehabbed everything. So I haven't had to do any repairs on it. And that's basically how it's been my whole career.
How did you find that deal?
It was an auction. So most of my deals, I get them from the MLS, but the the city of Detroit have a tax auction every year, and I believe every city has those. It's a fee of like $2,500 if you want to buy one property and $10,000 if you want to buy multiple. Well, that eliminates a lot of people because they don't have the $10,000, but you get the money back if you don't buy. So I found it in an auction. It was $2,000, and that's how I purchased it.
And what do you say is probably worth now that it's fixed up?
$42,000.
Okay. So there are people that will say, well, how do you buy a $2,000 house? But when you really look at it, you went through the rigors of an auction. You had enough money to put on deposit to get into that auction. Yep. You bought a house with the rehab budget of $19,000, right? When the house was only worth $40,000. So like 50% of that house's value was in its rehab, right? So like there's not many. Imagine if you're buying houses that are $100,000, but you need to put $50,000 into it to make it livable. Okay. You put yourself in a position where few other people wanted to go. There were a lot of barriers to entry, and that's how you got that great deal, right? So good investors, we look for that. That's opportunity. If there's a lot of barriers to entry, there's less competition, that's where you're going to get that deal. And that's really, really smart.
Yeah, actually, when I entered that auction, I didn't even have I only had the $2,500 to do one property. So I didn't even put the $10,000 deposit. I basically had to buy a property for $2,500 or I wasn't going to get in. Okay. And then I didn't have the money to fix it up. So Chase, I opened a bank account to get the $300 bonus that they were going to send me for opening an account at Chase. Yep. So I opened the account at Chase for the $300 bonus. And then they offered me a credit card for $16,000, you know, and a year with 0% interest. Well, that's how I financed the rehab on that. Oh, I had no clue of how I thought I was going to have to hold it for years or take a year to fix it up, but I was able to pull the money off the credit card and do the whole refinance and rented it out within 2 months for the $925 a month. And that's how I was able to pay it back within a year and plus some of my other income.
So there was no milk in the fridge and you opened the cabinet and Chase was your peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Absolutely. And I honestly, even though I owned multiple properties at the time, I still was working part-time. I only went to Chase for the $300 bonus that they were giving me. And I know people say, that's petty, Ashley. Come on now. No. You're making a good deal. You own rental properties, why would you open an account for $300? Because it's not costing me anything but 30 minutes of my time. If I don't like Chase policies and principles, I can just close the account. But why am I going to leave this $300 on a table? And then also, like you said, it was able to open up doors where I can do the rehab on a property.
Because you put yourself, you had that aggressive mindset, you were in the game and the steal came your way. Right? Like the other team turned the ball over. You were right there to jump on that fumble. And that's a big win. Plus downside, let's say nothing else comes out of it. You just made $600 for 1 hour of work, right? Are there, how many people are out there that's going to turn down $600 an hour of work, right? Most of them probably wouldn't be listening to this podcast.
Absolutely.
So that's awesome. In fact, that's such a good deal. I want to get into our deal deep dive. Deep dive.
Real estate investing is great, but for some, the tenant phone calls and clogged toilets aren't all that attractive. So how do you invest in real estate without getting your hands dirty? Invest for truly passive income with Pine Financial Group. Pine's mortgage fund offers a targeted 8% preferred return and an attractive profit split with 70% of net profits going to the investors. You'll earn passive income by participating in lending to house flippers. And it's secure because senior lien holders, that's you, are first in line to get paid. Their rigorous underwriting process and the backing of a physical asset mitigate downside risk. Plus, by investing with Pine Financial Group, you contribute to the revitalization of communities by directing your funds from Wall Street to Main Street and supporting local economies. The investment is reserved for accredited investors. Don't miss this opportunity to back Main Street over Wall Street and start earning passive real estate income. Learn more about investing with Pine at pinefinancialgroup.com/BP. pinefinancialgroup.com/BP. We're always looking for ways to improve, searching for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for better is by matching with quality candidates. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Just go to Indeed.com/BiggerPockets right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Deciding how to invest your capital can be extremely challenging, especially when the market is constantly changing. That's why it's never been more important to partner with a company that has a great track record. The BAM Capital executive team has successfully navigated through the Great Recession, COVID-19, and the current interest rate environment while delivering maximized returns to their partners. BAM Capital is a trusted multifamily syndicator with over $1.3 billion in transactions, delivering a historical average of over 35% IRR with an average hold period of 3.5 years. And BAM Capital has consistently paid preferred return distributions for over 50 consecutive months, has not lost limited partners' capital, and has not called capital past the subscription amount. BAM Capital's disciplined investment strategy is targeting undermanaged institutional quality trophy assets throughout the U.S. heartland for accredited investors who are looking for generational wealth building or monthly income opportunities. Their offerings target cash flow stability, capital preservation, long-term appreciation, and accelerated tax benefits. Join BAM Capital's over 1,200 investors across 44 states and get started today at BAMCapital.com. Again, that's BAMCapital.com.
So let's talk about one of these deals in particular. Do you have something in mind that we can dive deep into?
Yeah, I do.
Cool. So what kind of property is this? Is single family, multifamily?
It's a single family property.
Okay. David?
How did you find this deal?
I found this deal on auction as well.
Okay. What'd you...
It's the tax auction for $2,300.
$2,300. Wow. Not bad at all. Okay. And so
did you get a chance to negotiate it, or was that just the auction price?
That was just the auction price. We're bidding against people, just regular people like me, you and I. So when they, you know, I kept bidding and they eventually stopped at the $2,300.
Okay. All right. So how did you fund this $2,300?
Well, I was fortunate enough to have $2,300 in my account,
right.
You know, and I don't want to take that for granted because a lot of people don't. So I was fortunate enough because I had a couple rentals under my belt that I had the money in my account for it.
Okay.
So, to fund it, but I used a 0% credit card for a year to do the rehabs.
Okay.
And the rehab was $11,000. I'm sorry.
Okay. So after it was rehabbed, what did you do with the property?
I immediately rented it out about 2 months after I purchased it for $800 a month. The tenant, she was a young girl. She was a single parent and I saw the good in her. The property, I did everything from the beginning to the end and she stayed there 5 years.
Wow.
At $800 a month, she paid all her expenses. The property taxes in Detroit are very well or in the area that I'm in. So my property taxes were only $1,100 a year on that property. And my insurance was $69 a month. So I had about $100 a month, give or take, in insurance costs, it's $100 in tax costs, property tax, $69 in insurance, and everything else was covered by the tenant. Yeah. So for the 5 years that she was there paying $800 a month, I only put a backlight up and a faucet.
Wow.
You know, in 5 years. I didn't want to sell it or anything like that. I didn't have any aspirations of selling the property, but the business owner that was on the corner, they really wanted to buy it and they would not leave me alone. And coincidentally, the tenant, you know, she was late every month. I'm not going to lie. So she was the one person that was late every month, which actually worked out well for me because I was getting the $50 late fee every month, which added to the profit. But I was kind of getting tired of her as well. Even though I wasn't fixing anything, she was late every month. So when a business owner, they wanted to buy the property in 5 years, I went ahead and sold it to them.
Okay.
I don't typically do that. That's definitely not the plan, but I went ahead and gave in. I was kind of tired of her and I went ahead and sold it. And he paid $40,000 cash for it.
Oh, cool.
5 years later.
Okay. I was going to ask you what the outcome was. That was the outcome. Good.
Yeah.
All right. Last one then. What did you learn from the deal? What overall lessons can you pull from this deal deep dive?
Absolutely. So I learned courage to do it. I learned the financing, the rehab. That was my first time being able to finance for a credit card. So I learned how to do that. And then I also learned patience, extreme patience, because a lot of people may have put her out because she was late every month, not even exaggerating, but she would always pay. And I knew she was a single mother and I kind of, you know, identify with her. So I was patient with her and she always paid. So I definitely learned patience and the courage. And I would say financing, you know, different ways to finance deals.
Okay. Let me ask you a question. Not really part of the deal deep dive, but as a landlord, as somebody who you're managing your own properties and you got 35 of them now, one thing that I struggled with a lot when I was doing a lot of my own, like real hands-on management, even though they didn't know I was the landlord all the time, I struggle with empathy. And that's a weird phrase to say, I struggle with empathy, right? But I want to, I'm like, I get them. I've been in their spot. You know, I was never a single mother, but you know, I understand it, right? How do you separate the business of, no, you need to pay rent and there's going to be a late fee from, I want to help you because I want to empathize with you and I want to, you know, be your friend. How do you reconcile those two sides as a landlord?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my biggest thing is business is business. So no matter what, even though she was late every month, and I knew she paid, she still got an eviction notice on the third every month. I felt like I was wasting stamp and envelope because I knew she would pay.
Yeah.
But every month I spent that $1.25 or whatever to mail her eviction notice. And I would text her sometime. Hey,
yes.
Nothing personal. Business is business. This will never go on your record as long as you pay it within this time frame. And sometimes I actually had to take her to court. There was about three or four times that I actually had to proceed on the eviction and take her to court. And, you know, like I said, it was nothing personal against her. And I let her know that immediately, but business is business. And then I also removed myself from the situation again and told her, hey, this is the situation. I have 35 properties that I manage. I'm by myself. There's nothing personal against you, but to make my business run smoother and just to keep the sanity in my life, I just do everybody the same way. So everybody on the third, whoever hasn't paid, they get eviction notice, whether it's my sister or my friend, no matter who it is, I do the same thing to everybody. And that way they kind of don't feel like I'm picking on them. They feel like, hey, it's just a business, or she's just so busy, she just do it to everybody, you know?
Yep.
So that's how I was able to do that.
That is so, so good and so true, because probably the biggest mistake I see landlords make across the board is that they start treating their people like friends. And there's nothing wrong with like being friendly, right? But as soon as you start giving a little bit for a tenant, like it's, and again, not that they're bad people, but they will start taking advantage of that. And they'll start, but as soon as they know that this is a business and it's not personal, and you do this for all of the people, I mean, essentially you want them to think like this is a machine that I'm inside of. And that way it separates out. Like, I'm just running a machine. The machine is what's doing the eviction on, not you, not me. It's the machine that does the eviction, right? It's like giving this persona of a machine to your business. And that helps you as a landlord, because you're like, yes, it's just machine. It's just business. Mm-hmm. This is business. So anyway, if you're listening to this right now and you are a landlord and you struggle with that, just rewind that last like 2-3 minutes again, because that is incredible advice, Ashley. Really, really awesome. All right.
And then also I do identify with a lot of people, and I am really kind and giving. And honestly, I know it's sad to say, but that really is a downfall of mine with dealing with contractors and stuff. But every year I give my tenants on Christmas a $50 gift card from Walmart. So that's kind of a way to say, hey, it's nothing personal. You know, hey, Ashley, you sent me 10 evictions this year, but I'm going to give you a $50 gift card on Christmas because I care, you know, it's nothing personal. But sometimes I realize, like, when doing that, I don't even get a thank you sometimes from the tenant. You know, they don't even, like, three or four people wouldn't even acknowledge that I gave it to them. So the following year, I just give them a $25 gift card. But I still do it because I want, like I said, I want to give back.
I love that.
I want to give back. And I feel like I'm being blessed by being a good person, because there's a lot of not good people in the world. And I've experienced a lot of that. So I feel like I've been able to be so successful because I'm always good at heart. You know, and honestly, it does kind of feel like the bad guy when you have to evict somebody, or you have to send them eviction notice every week and you understand that their car broke down, but you still have to call them every day and say, hey, let me pay rent. So I do want to sleep at night. And I know, like, hey, at the end of the day, I did everything possible to help this person out. I let them be late on the rent. I still gave them a Christmas card every year. And unfortunately, it didn't work out, but I'm still going to sleep at night because I know at the end of the day, I was a good person to that. You know, I was a good person to them.
As you guys were talking, I was actually thinking, I wonder if the people who don't give to charities and don't give back and don't have a charitable lifestyle have a harder time evicting their tenants because they feel like a bad person. Whereas the people that are giving naturally can say, no, hey, you didn't pay, you're out, right? And they don't have that guilty conscience because they know, I'm not a bad person. I'm giving here, here, and here. There's almost like that, like, hidden, if you do what you should be doing in life, it makes this a lot easier.
Yeah, interesting. I used to actually, there was a number of years, probably 2 years in a row, where we gave out like 50 of our tenants, like a $50 gift card for somewhere. And we got back one thank you. Like one person acknowledged it, right? And I didn't do it for the acknowledgement, but like, you know, we stopped doing it. Like, we just stopped doing it. And guess what? Nobody thanked us again because we didn't do it. You know, I mean, it made no difference in my business. I'm not saying people should or shouldn't give out Christmas gifts, but I found that it was literally no difference in my business at all. So we finally stopped. But they're actually, I think it was the one lady who said thank you. I think we actually send her a Christmas card every year.
Yeah,
and anyway, funny. All right. So
now that is funny. And absolutely. And you're right. I can still do the same thing. Whether I give them a gift card or not, they still have to pay their rent. Yep. They still can get even, you know, but it's just personally, I'm not able to give as much as charity because right now I was in such of a build mode. So I do what I can. And I do feel like David said, that is the form of giving back.
You know what I would do is I would take every gift card for the people who didn't say thank you, and I'd give it to the one person who did the next year. You get all the gift cards.
Yeah, I actually did that last year. So the one tenant, this was their first year with me, and they paid every month on time, and I gave them the gift card, and they didn't say thank you. So this year, I sent them a $25 gift card, and one of my other tenants that's been there the longest, she has twin girls. I sent them, the girls, the gift card for $25, and then I sent the tenant $50. Yeah. So I did do that, but I still gave them a little something to give them a chance. But next year, I think that it will be gone for those people who didn't appreciate it or acknowledge it.
The life lesson, everybody out there, if you show gratitude, the universe will give you more.
There you go.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that was the deal deep dive. I love that. That was fantastic. But now it's time to head over to the next segment of the show, which we call the fire round.
It's time for the fire round.
All right. It's time for the fire round. Of course, these questions come direct out of the Bigger Pockets forums, which everyone here can go visit and should visit because you get to hang out with really cool people like Ashley.
Yes.
And David Green and Brandon Turner at biggerpockets.com/forums. And now let's get to some of these. I like this one because it's very closely related to what we're talking about today. Chris asked, so he said, there's a few houses in my area I'm familiar with. They're under 50K. I'm wondering, do you have any idea on how I can purchase them? I've got great credit and I've got some money, $12,000 to $15,000, but no bank wants to go under $60,000. Any tips on how I can finance these properties? So if you had to go actually finance a $50,000 property, you got 10, 15 grand, but the bank won't do it. What would you do?
Well, now I know that banks are, well, not banks, but more so credit unions. Mm-hmm. They are lending the credit union that I'm hooked up with now, they'll lend under up until $14,000. I'm sorry about that.
Yep.
So if somebody's telling you no, you're probably asking the wrong person.
Yep.
You know, I would definitely 100% do that. Also, if you have $15,000, if you have good credit, I know it's not the best thing for your credit, but I would consider opening up a credit card with a line of credit that you can have access to and get a year of money for free, you know, 0% interest.
Perfect. And I want to echo what you just said there, because that's so true. To everyone out there who says I can't find a bank to finance my these low price houses, I have never in my entire life heard of an area that sold like livable cheap houses that you couldn't find a bank to finance those, because I just would like it just doesn't. They always exist. Always. Now, maybe in David Green's area here of the Bay Area, San Francisco, if he wanted to buy a $50,000 property, yeah, he's not going to probably find a local bank to do it, because that's not what they understand and know. But that's why you will not find a $50,000 house in David's area. They just don't exist. And if they did exist, nice $50,000 properties, then there would be a bank to service it. Like, because... Yeah. So anyway, it just means the person's not, they're probably going to Chase or they're going to Bank of America or Wells Fargo. And they're saying, oh, well, we have a minimum of 60. Okay. Well, I guess I'll go back to, you know, drinking or eating my cereal without any milk in it. And,
right.
You know,
I work for one of those banks and I can't get a loan from them.
Yep.
And I'm an employee of them.
Yep. Exactly. So. Right. They have their requirements, but just what you said, perfect. Like credit unions, small local community banks, that's where you're going to get those. They understand. And talk to a real estate agent, right? Real estate agents who sell that type of property will know exactly who can close a loan. I mean, heck, Quicken Loans will probably do it. Call up Quicken Loans and they'll probably close a $40,000, $30,000 property.
Look at this. We should call this like the sandwich method. You got a peanut butter jelly sandwich. You got a bologna sandwich. You got a turkey sandwich. You got something.
I want my milk, my cereal and milk. All right. David Green.
And it's funny you mentioned Quicken Loans, because Dan Gilbert, he invests hundreds of million dollars in Detroit.
Yeah.
He's the owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers and he owns Quicken Loans, and he's investing hundreds of million dollars in Detroit.
Yeah, so, he's turning that city around.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Those good dude.
Stupid investors ruining everything.
I know. Right. Yeah, hey, if anybody has a connection to Dan Gilbert, actually, we should totally get him on the podcast. Yeah. Wouldn't that be an amazing podcast? Like,
Brandon.
Yeah.
It's like I found a way to get to
exactly,
you.
Exactly. Right.
That's my next goal.
All right.
That was always the goal.
Yeah. We want to get him on that. That would be an amazing show. Like, how do you invest hundreds of millions of dollars in a market that terrifies most people and like completely turn around an entire portion of the United States single-handedly? Like, that's what I want to know. Like, how do you do that? That'd be an amazing show.
And if you suck and you can't find Dan Gilbert as a consolation prize, we would accept Mark Cuban or Elon Musk or one of those kind of.
I'd take Eminem.
Yeah. Or you know what? Brandon and I are actually trying to get Vanilla Ice really badly because he is a real estate investor. So if anybody knows Vanilla Ice. All right, enough about Let's get back.
Kevin Hart. Is a real estate investor. I just found out the other day. You know Kevin Hart, like awesome dude, wow. Actor. Yeah, apparently he like is like a big real estate investor. So I wouldn't mind having him on the show too. Anyway, all right. Somebody out there might know him.
Fire round. David Green. Question. This is actually a really good one here. If you're looking for buy and hold properties out of state, how do you decide if a neighborhood is good or bad? I've tried looking at areas via Google Street View, but I know that's probably not super accurate.
Right. So buy and hold properties are rental properties. So the biggest thing I would do is look for properties, rental properties that's on the market currently. You'll be able to tell the quality of work that's being done in the property, how they're looking and how long they've been on the market, what are rents going for. And that's, or you can contact a local real estate agent or property manager just to see. My properties, typically now when I list a property for rent in Detroit, I have to take it down within 8 hours. This last property, I had 200 inquiries in 8 hours. So that's a way just to see, hey, that property was only listed for 8 hours. Yeah. That's a good area to invest in, to buy and hold in.
Smart. All right. Let's do the last one of the fire round. We'll move on after this. Last one. I know a lot of people ask whether it's smart for investors to get their real estate license. My question though is like, what kind of investor should get their license and what kind shouldn't? What do you think?
I would say an investor that is trying to find multiple streams of income, that's trying to learn the market and to learn the process of the market. And basically an investor that wants to network and grow their business.
Yeah, I think that's smart. And, you know, some people are good at being the agent thing and some people just wouldn't be good at it. So having a little self-awareness to know, like, am I somebody that wants to go out, can self-start a little bit, meet people, pick up the phone and talk to people? Like, is that something I'm good at or not?
Yeah. Right? Don't do it because you think it's going to get you more deals. I think that's one of the big mistakes people make, because your agent's already working for you for free. They're going to be hungrier than you would be. They want to find you deals. You should really only do it if you're actually trying to like make some money or it will benefit your business in some other way. Like, I think you made a really good point. You said, well, I get a handful here and there and I work them when I do, but you're not out there with your hair on fire trying to crush it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
It was just a way of creating multiple income streams and just trying to do a little bit of everything just to see what I'm good at, what's the easiest and more beneficial to me to focus on my goals, which is having more time for my kids.
There you go. All right. Well, that was fantastic. And again, Ashley is in the Bigger Pockets forums, hanging out in there, answering questions all the time. There's a lot of people in there. So people jump into the forums. They're so good and they're really expensive to use. They cost free. Free 99. Let's head over to the next segment of the show. The final section. It's the
Famous Four.
These are the four questions we ask every guest every week. So Ashley, I know you've heard these before. And so now I'm excited to hear what you got to say. Number one, what is your current favorite real estate related book?
So basically, I don't read a lot. Unfortunately, I have 3 jobs and plus I spend a lot of time with my kids. So I definitely want to do that. I'm planning on slowing down with the work in 5 years. So at that point, I'll read more. But my favorite real estate book would be Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki, because that's pretty much one of the ones that I read.
Yep, that's all right. Yeah, I mean, that book is so influential and just fantastic. So cool. All right.
All right, Ashley, how about your favorite business book?
Okay, well, my favorite business book is The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. And that was actually the first book I read, period, as a real estate agent. I learned so much about that and about scaling your business and stuff like that. So I really like that book. I know it's an old one, but I've really learned a lot from it.
So good.
Okay, and how about some of your hobbies?
Well, my biggest hobby now is just spending time with my family, really the kids in my family. No offense to the adults, but the kids are way cooler. I really take pride in changing kids' lives and giving them a free, innocent childhood, something that I feel like I didn't have. I don't want them to grow up. So as much as I can take them to the movies, have any experience with them, I do that. I like to play poker. I go to the casino and play poker a lot. And I was learning a lot, whether it's via YouTube or, you know, listen to the podcast, but those are my hobbies.
All right. Perfect. And a final question from me, Ashley, what do you believe sets apart successful real estate investors from those who give up, fail, or never get started?
Okay. So I would say, based upon my experience, the biggest thing would be probably intimidation. You know, growing up watching HGTV and listening to webinars and seminars, and you hear how much these people have obtained, and you feel like, well, I don't know anybody like that, or I'm not like that, so I can never be that way. So they probably give up because they feel like they'll never amass that success. So I would definitely say intimidation, and then also fear of what will happen if they don't succeed and the perception that people will give.
Yeah,
definitely. And then also lastly, the inability to live how most won't, to live the rest of your life how most people don't. You know, they're not willing to give up their iPhones every year for $1,000.
Yep. That's solid. Well,
that was, really good. Ashley, you are a inspirational and captivating figure. Tell us, for those who want more, where can they find out more about you?
Right. So like I said, I am pretty busy. I do have a lot of jobs. So I am on the forums every day. Notifications go right to my phone. That's the biggest place. I have a website. I have social media, but I'm not actually active on those things. So if they really want to contact me, they can just contact me directly at Bigger Pockets or Instagram. I do have an Instagram page. It's Ashley Elite Investor, but Bigger Pockets would be the best way.
And it actually kind of fits into your, if you're like the iPhone comment you made, right? Like most people spend their entire lives sitting on social media all day. And you're saying, you know what, right now I'm not going to do that because that's not like, I'm willing to live right now like no one else so that later on I can live, you know, an incredible life. That's my quote right there.
I'm Brandon Turner. On social media.
That's
everything
great.
Is trying to be knowledge, gain knowledge, take advantage of my time here.
Yeah.
There when you I'm go. Retired, when the kids are off in college in like 5 years, actually by me starting earlier, I know at that time I feel really like, oh my God, my life is over. I'm 19. I have two kids, but when I'm 38, I'll be an empty nester, you know, and then I'll have all this real estate to look back on. So I look forward to traveling and learning way more and then watching the Dancing with the Stars.
There you go.
And binge watching Game of Thrones. Did you guys watch that last night?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Well, I don't want that on the podcast. I was just saying.
That's all right.
I never watched an episode of it, honestly. So I'll have plenty of time to binge watch that, I'm sure.
You will. And I, honestly, the first 10 years of me and Heather just crushing real estate, we did a lot of real estate. And we had very little Netflix, very little anything. And like we worked hard at it for 13 years now. And so now we're able to ease off the gas a little more because it gets easier over time, as I'm sure you're probably noticing. Yeah.
Yeah, you should live like a Stark now so you can live like a Lannister later.
Right? I don't even know the reference because I've never watched the show, so I don't even know what that is.
It's pretty accurate. Yeah. All right. With that, we got to get out of here. Ashley, thank you so much again for being part of this show. Really, really fantastic. And make sure everyone goes and connects with Ashley and everybody else on the Bigger Pockets forums. Go connect in there. If you've never used it before, the very, 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 very easy way to start is just jump into the new member introduction forum. Just go say, hey, who are you? What are you looking to do? Make sure your profile has a picture. It's going to be way better. People don't like talking to an avatar, right? And, see if you can answer one question. Even if you're brand new, there are likely questions you can help people work through or topics. So jump in and answer one question today. It's a good way to get started. Any other tips, Ashley, you have on using the forums? Anything that you found is helpful?
I would definitely say just answering as much questions as possible and then setting up keyword alerts.
So
I have the Detroit, of course. Anytime anybody says anything about Detroit, I get an alert. 90% of it is bad. And then I'm over there, hey, playing devil's advocate. Yeah. Like, no, look what I'm doing, you know, but
that's great.
At the same time, I'm kind of happy because it gives more opportunities for me. So,
And what's cool then is like,
answer question.
When you jump in there, right? Because now you're the person who jumps into all the Detroit conversations. So now I'm, let's say, an out-of-state investor or I'm a local investor and I want some help. I want an agent. I want Somebody boots on the ground. Who am I going to go to? The guy who's ragging on Detroit, or I'm going to go to Ashley, who understands the market and clearly has market knowledge, clearly has experience, and is in there helping. That's the spirit of Bigger Pockets. So people wonder, well, why would I want to go and participate in a forum? Because it benefits you. It benefits everybody. So anyway, jump in there. So again, Ashley, thank you so much. This has been awesome.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys. I look forward to being back on the show with the next phase of my career.
There you go. Awesome. All right. David Green, you want to take us out?
Yes. Thank you very much, Ashley. This is David Green for Brandon, the quote stealer Turner, signing off.
I borrow him.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com. Your home for real estate investing online.
The market is changing and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals and enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and bam, instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today. The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.